state wants to have a debate about who has the temperament and judgment to serve as the next commander-in-chief, that's a debate I'm ready to have.
The debate is on. 1 hour from now, Barack Obama, as you can hear, has been salivating for this. John McCain, maybe not so much, but he's never one to shrink from a fight. From WNYC in New York, it's Public Radio's Election Reset. I'm Brian Lehrer, and right after the news, we will press the pause button on the rhetoric and hyperbole channels and take stock of where the country and the campaign are as we head toward this Friday night debate. We hope you stay with us. You can also join our team Twitter feed at WNYC.org. Of the first debate, you can forgive yourself if you're a little confused about the state of the campaign.
Americans, by a fairly large margin, say they would like to have a Democrat be their next president, but
Real Clear Politics has the Republican ahead by more than 1 point.
The new CBS News poll shows Barack Obama is back in the lead.
In a choice between Obama and McCain, Clinton voters, one-third of them would vote for McCain and 17% wouldn't vote.
Not only does Obama have a lead outside the margin of error of the poll, he already leads McCain among some of the key groups the media has said he is going to struggle with.
We've been talking about this. The polls tracking the presidential race, they just seem to change almost hour to hour. Some show McCain with a lead, others show Obama.
And from WNYC in New York, it's Public Radio's Election Reset. I'm Brian Lehrer. No relation to Jim Lehrer, who is moderating tonight's debate, but if you've been hiding in the cracks between campaign spin and economic Armageddon, it's okay. Come out. Come out, wherever you are, and let's take a deep breath together and take stock of where this campaign is at. Now, later in the hour, we will take your phone calls at 1-800-543-2543. How's that for an easy number to remember? 1-800-543-2543. You can start calling now to answer this question. What don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight? I'll ask that again. What don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight? Call 1-800-543-2543, 1-800-543-2543, or send an email to electionreset@gmail.com. What don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight? With us now, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein, Chicago Tribune syndicated columnist Clarence Page, and San Diego Union Tribune columnist Ruben Navarrete, who is also syndicated by the Washington Post Writers Group. Hello to all of you.
Hello, Brian.
Good evening.
Hello.
And Andrea Bernstein, we call this show Public Radio's Election Reset because we want it to be more than some cable channel's pregame show. So why don't you take a minute? I know you were talking to me about this before. And reset for us a little bit. Remind us a little of how we got to this insanely pressurized place that we're in tonight.
Okay, so a year ago, Hillary Clinton was the Democratic Party front runner, and there was no way that Barack Obama was going to be able to catch up with her. Rudy Giuliani was the Republican Party front runner, perhaps with a little bit more of a less assured position, but still comfortably ahead in the polls. So if we were right a year ago reading the polls and the polls were actually predictive, we'd be watching a debate tonight between Hillary Clinton and Rudy Giuliani. What a year it has been. A six-month-long primary that everybody thought was surely going to be over after the New Hampshire primary because there was so much money being spent and the schedule was so front-loaded. Instead, of course, it went on way into the spring and then into the summer. It started out in the snows of Iowa. Here we are with two nominees who were never supposed to be. McCain, of course, his campaign had tanked in July of 2007, and everybody thought it was dead, that he was out of it. He came on to become the nominee. So a year of completely unexpected surprises that continue up to the moment.
How many journalists made vacation plans for February 6th of this year, the day after Super Tuesday? Ha, ha, ha. And, of course, we heard that montage. that told us how back and forth the general election race has been. You know, Clarence Page, David Brooks had a thoughtful column today. The main point was to advise the public to ignore the crazy campaigns that both sides are running and focus on who these candidates have really been in their careers, which would be much better than their attack ad selves, he says. Does an issue-oriented debate like this, mostly on foreign policy tonight, help the public refocus on what matters, or is this just another opportunity to keep the spin cycle spinning?
Well, I think what this debate does at this point is to persuade the undecided voters, because something like 80% or more have made up their minds, judging by the polls. But there is that group of people who was not that engaged until now, and we're seeing a record amounts of viewership for the conventions. We expect a record to be set this evening for viewership. There are a lot of people out there who haven't made up their minds yet. There are certainly Republicans who just recently became really engaged after Sarah Palin came in.
So there is a swing vote out there. There are undecideds. Ruben Navarrete, obviously this debate comes at a historic moment of national crisis and confusion and anger and fear about the economy and the bailout plans. This was supposed to be a foreign policy debate. Will it turn at least partly into a banking crisis debate because it has to?
Absolutely. I think the word is already that at least the first 30 minutes, maybe more, will be about the banking crisis, about the economic crisis. It would be surreal to watch these two candidates talk about North Korea or Afghanistan or Iraq when everybody wants to talk about Wall Street. So I think the candidates would inevitably take the discussion in that direction. Certainly, I think Jim Lehrer is going to take it in that direction at the beginning. And, yeah, they're going to have to know a little bit of both tonight. They're going to talk about foreign policy and national security for sure. But I think the headlines tomorrow are all going to be about the bailout and what they had to say about the one issue that everybody's talking about.
Ruben, you generally write in support of John McCain. Did he do the right thing, in your opinion, inserting the fate of the debate into the negotiations?
I think McCain came out very well this week. I may be the only journalist in the mainstream media who believes that. I think this was a good week for leadership, a good week for McCain. I think that Obama looked sort of foolish going to the White House for a meeting and then retreating to take questions at the Mayflower Hotel instead of going over to Congress to tend to his day job. But aside from that, you know, I've said nice things about Barack Obama and Sarah Palin at various times. I've said nice things about John McCain about the questions of leadership. I really do think that for people who cover him and have covered him for a long time, you mentioned David Brooks, those people all can't separate the McCain that they've covered all these many years from the McCain who's running in the campaign. They think this is a guy whose integrity is very important to him, who really does take his job seriously, and I think we saw some of that this week.
The only one you left out was Joe Biden. Don't you say nice things about him?
I don't. I refer to Joe Biden as a human gaffe factory, and the problem with writing that column is no sooner had I got to print that he'd made more three or four more gaffes to get into the column. So,
Clarence Page, did John McCain do the right thing this week?
No, I disagree with my friend Ruben. I think I like John McCain, too, and I've been disappointed in a couple of things in the campaign. I thought the Palin choice was one where he didn't put country first. He put politics first, and it gave him a bump this week. He shocked a lot of people by thinking it was more important for him to come to Washington to engage in the debate over the bailout, even though he's not a member of any of the relevant committees. And he thought that was more important than this debate, which will be used by the citizens to decide their next leader. That's so essential to democracy. It looked like a stunt when he didn't really have a material influence on the bailout debate. It looked like even more of a stunt and like he was going back to where he should have been in the first place. I don't think he gained any ground this week.
Bernstein, I'm not going to ask you to take sides here, but did John McCain change the public expectations for tonight by saying he wouldn't show up unless there was a bailout plan agreement, then reversing course and deciding to come without one? We heard about the expected record viewership. He probably, lobbed in a game changer in terms of the public being galvanized for this.
Well, I think that this was going to be a very, very much watched debate under any circumstances. I mean, both convention speeches blew out television watching records. It's a year when people are very, very interested in politics. And especially this year, with all of the noise, all of the internet, the 24/7 cable coverage, all of the television ads, it's hard to get through to voters. And there's actually sort of only a few moments between now and November when the candidates have their full attention. Tonight is one of them. So I think under any circumstances, people would have been watching tonight. One of the things that I've found from being out among the voters this week is that people's opinions about whether McCain did the right thing exactly track whether they are for John McCain or whether they are for Barack Obama. That if you think if you are for McCain, you think he did the right thing. If you're undecided, a lot of people weren't sure if it was the right thing. People still felt like there should be a debate. There's a real hunger for people to get policy details, and that makes sense. In a time of economic crisis, in a time when there are two wars going on, people want to know, what are you going to do? What is your plan? And people will be looking for that. Voters will be looking for that tonight, undecided voters. That's what they've been telling me.
So in the spirit of that answer, let me take our last 2 minutes with you guys and ask you our caller question. What don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight? Maybe even three jaded political pros like yourselves might learn something about these guys. So let me put you on the spot, Ruben Navarrete. What don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight? Anything?
Got it. Yes. I'd like to know about their propensity and their willingness and their courage to tell the American people what they need to hear as opposed to what we want to hear. I think I'd give them both low marks on the following. They are each looking for people to blame. Barack Obama blames George Bush. John McCain blames Christopher Cox at the SEC. Nobody points the finger at the American people who took these mortgages, and blames them. It's just not good if you're running for office to make enemies, I guess, and to offend people. So I'd like to see more about the propensity of both of these individuals to pull up a chapter out of the Bobby Kennedy playbook and tell people what they want, what they need to hear, instead of constantly what they want to hear.
Andrew Bernstein, 30 seconds.
I'd like to hear a whole lot more details about how each of them proposes to get the United States from here, which is the middle of this economic mess, to where they want to get, and not just the triage, but what is their program? Where do they realistically think that they can get, given the current situation, in 4 and in 8 years?
And Clarence Page, what do you want to hear that you don't already know?
I know everything about them except what they want to do about Pakistan, which is just falling apart right now, and they've got nukes. And we just had a battle this week between Pakistan troops and American troops over the Afghan border, and nobody even paid attention because so much has been happening here.
Can you imagine the headlines, Clarence, if we hadn't been obsessing on the financial crisis, when U.S. troops and Pakistani troops actually spent 5 minutes shooting at each other, if these reports are accurate, shooting at each other when we're supposed to be allies against the Taliban? And we will definitely be asking our subsequent foreign policy expert guests about that coming up in just a minute. And I certainly hope, too, that Jim Lehrer asks the candidates about that. Andrew Bernstein, Clarence Page, Ruben Navarrete, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Once the debate starts, folks, keep your computer on and check out our Twitter debate companion. I will be team tweeting there with WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein and on the media's Brooke Gladstone and John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway. You can post there, too. Go to WNYC.org for the Twitter debate companion.
That somehow not talking to countries is punishment to them, which has been the guiding diplomatic principle of this administration, is ridiculous.
Obama from his convention speech. This is Public Radio's Election Reset from WNYC New York. I'm Brian Lehrer. In a few minutes, we will take your phone calls at 1-800-543-2543. You can start calling now to answer the question we just asked our last guests. What don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight? I'll ask that again. What don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight? Call 1-800-543-2543, 1-800-543-2543. You can also send email to electionreset@gmail.com. But by all means, call 1-800-543-2543 and tell us what you don't already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight. We'll do two quick interviews right now, about 8 minutes each, with supporters of the candidates referred to us by their campaigns. First, for Senator Obama, former Ambassador Wendy Sherman, a principal in Madeleine Albright's consulting firm these days. Ambassador Sherman served under Albright in the Clinton administration. Among other things, she was policy coordinator on North Korea. Ambassador Sherman, thanks very much for coming on with us.
Good to be with you.
We played the clip of Senator Obama there attacking McCain and President Bush for not wanting to talk to our enemies. I'm sure this will come up tonight. Where do you think the balance is for you and for him between isolating enemies as a pressure tactic and talking to them as a constructive act?
I think that it's very important to be ready to speak directly with our enemies. Prime Minister Rabin, who was tragically assassinated some years ago, always used to say, you don't make peace with your friends, you make peace with your enemies. And in order to do that, you have to be able to sit down and negotiate with them. Senator Obama believes that we ought to be ready to directly engage our enemies. That doesn't mean that we trust them. That doesn't mean that we give in to them or appease them. That means we're tough negotiators with them. And if the way has been prepared, we might even have the President of the United States sit down and meet with them. But that way has to be prepared, and Senator Obama has been very clear about that.
Clarence Page, just before you came on, I don't know if you heard it, said he wants to hear from the candidates tonight what they would do about Pakistan. And Pakistani and U.S. troops actually fired on each other the other day around the Pakistan-Afghanistan border. Senator Obama already has gotten a lot of reaction for saying in an early debate that he would invade Pakistan without their permission to get at the right al-Qaeda targets. Now, I asked Zbigniew Brzezinski on another program this morning, the former national security advisor to President Carter, who is an Obama supporter, whether he agreed with that position by Obama, and he didn't. Let me play a little of his answer.
If we engage in a deepening militarization of our presence there, and if we begin to undertake military operations across the board into Pakistan, we'll translate our involvement in Afghanistan into a prolonged and deepening involvement in Pakistan itself. And if that happens, we're going to be bogged down in that part of the world, perhaps for 2 decades.
What do you say to Zbigniew Brzezinski, Ambassador Sherman?
Well, I have great admiration for Dr. Brzezinski on this matter. What Senator Obama has said is that if we have actionable intelligence, that means we know where Osama bin Laden is, for instance, and we're pretty clear about it, then we want to work with the Pakistani government, and we have a brand new government with whom we can hopefully work to try to take out Osama bin Laden. But if the Pakistani government is not willing or is not able, which may be the matter at hand,
now,
then the U.S. should be willing to take the action necessary to protect Pakistanis as well as Americans.
You say Osama bin Laden, which seems like an obvious case, but we're already doing it under the Bush administration for much lesser targets. Would Senator Obama be critical of that if asked tonight?
Well, I think Senator Obama would say that he will look very carefully at each instance, and that in the first instance, we want to work with this Pakistani government. This has become very personal for me because I'm a commissioner on a congressional commission to prevent weapons of mass destruction, proliferation, and terrorism. And the commission was on its way to Islamabad, Pakistan, last weekend, landed in Kuwait, only to see an email that the hotel we were about to stay in about 10 hours later had just been bombed and destroyed. So Pakistan is probably one of the most crucial national security and foreign policy issues. And Senator Obama has been very clear this is a high priority. We should have had our eye on Afghanistan and Pakistan from the start. We ought to have a serious Pakistan policy that's not just about the single leader of a country, that we ought to increase our assistance to Pakistan so that people are educated and have something to look forward in their lives. But we also have to be ready to do what's necessary with our allies in Afghanistan.
Ambassador Sherman, in keeping with the news of the day and theme of the debate, do you think the Obama and McCain responses to the credit crisis, and I'm talking about the policy level, not the political level, have implications for U.S. foreign policy?
Absolutely. This is a global economic crisis, not just an American economic crisis. It may have been driven by the American economy, but it is now all over the world because these home mortgages were bundled and resold overseas. And this global economic crisis puts our national security at risk. So I think Senator Obama's been very straightforward about this. He said that the American taxpayer, the American homeowner, has to be protected. There should be an independent board to provide oversight and accountability, protection for taxpayers, a plan to help innocent homeowners struggling to stay in their homes, and most importantly, accountability for the Wall Street executives and, quite frankly, for the Bush administration who got us into this mess.
Do you think that leaves him in a very different position than Senator McCain tonight?
What I think it leaves him in is a man who has shown extraordinary judgment, steadiness in a really dire and difficult situation. I think we've seen Senator McCain be rather erratic and sort of throw himself into the middle of a negotiation that he knew nothing about. And so I think that what we've seen out of Senator Obama is an ability to be clear about his principles, to be on the side of the American family, the American taxpayer, to say this is a time to solve this crisis, and then we have to hold the people accountable who got us into this mess.
Ambassador Sherman, before joining the State Department, and again relevant to the news of today, I saw in your bio that you were president and CEO of the Fannie Mae Foundation, mm-hmm. which your bio says was developed to promote home ownership.
Mm-hmm.
Did the Clinton administration, did you help start the downward spiral on mortgage lending standards, more subprime loans, was a policy as seen as a social good at that time, wasn't it?
The policy was seen as a social good. I was not a part of Fannie Mae, the corporation. The foundation was a separate and independent entity and gave grants to communities to not only encourage home ownership, but to help people like a partnership with Habitat for Humanity. So it was a charitable foundation that operated in quite a different frame than the corporation itself.
And on the policy question, did the Clinton administration make a mistake, start us down the wrong road?
I don't think the Clinton administration made a mistake. I think America has always been about home ownership. I think what happened during the Bush administration in the last almost 8 years is we had no regulation whatsoever. We had nobody watching the store. We had exotic new financial instruments created called credit debt swaps and all kinds of derivative instruments that got repackaged, bundled, and sold abroad. And these exotic instruments had no oversight. People thought that home values were so high that you could sell a house to somebody with no money down, at mm-hmm. no interest, and if they defaulted, you'd just sell it and make a profit anyway.
Last question. Give me about 30 seconds on this. You have emphasized in recent interviews elsewhere Obama's greater ability to work with our allies, as you see it, than John McCain's. Is that a good thing? His popularity abroad actually seemed to generate a backlash after his recent overseas trip.
Well, look, it's the American people who elect the next president of the United States, and Senator Obama is clear about that, and the votes he needs and the votes he wants are right here in the USA. As someone who does travel all over the world, however, we can't solve any of these very difficult problems all by ourselves. We can't live in a unilateral or unidimensional Iraq-only world where everything is seen through one prism. We have to, my mother used to say, work and play well with others. And during the Bush administration, we have not. Barack Obama has been very clear that he wants to rebuild our alliances to meet our national security interests and to make sure the world is a better place for our kids.
Ambassador Wendy Sherman, a State Department official under Madeleine Albright in the Clinton administration, referred to us by the Obama campaign. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Obama was wrong about Iran, he was wrong about Iraq, and he has no experience, and more importantly, he lacks the judgment to lead this country.
With me now, referred by the McCain campaign, is Max Boot, senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, a columnist for the Weekly Standard and the L.A. Times, and the author of several books on military and legal affairs. Mr. Boot, welcome to Public Radio's Election Reset.
Thank you very much.
We heard from Wendy Sherman, representing Obama, that they think he'd be more effective at working with our allies. You just heard that. Given the record of the Bush administration and John McCain in supporting the Iraq war, for example. Do you have a response to that?
John McCain has been working with our allies for decades. He has been somebody who's been traveling the world. He's been attending conferences. He's been meeting with presidents and prime ministers. He has been cultivating diplomatic relationships and cultivating them at a time when Barack Obama was still in the Illinois State Senate. But a lot of the proposals that Senator Obama puts forward are odds with the arguments made by Ambassador Sherman and others that he would be somebody who would be multilateral and who would repair our relationships. In fact, a lot of his statements are actually very unilateral. When you look, for example, at the fact that he's talked about unilaterally abrogating the North American Free Trade Agreement, renegotiating the terms of NAFTA, which has sent Canada and Mexico into shock, or when he's opposed fresh trade agreements with some of our closest allies, such as Colombia, that's hurt our relationships and really damaged this push towards free trade that American presidents of both parties have been backing for decades.
What about on the crucial issue of getting our NATO allies to send more troops or other support to Afghanistan? The Bush administration has been frustrated by that. Wouldn't it be easier for Barack Obama to get these NATO allies, because of his popularity in those countries, to fork over more troops and put them at risk than it will be for John McCain, who may be seen as a continuation of President Bush's war policy?
I very much wish that Barack Obama, if he becomes elected president, has more success in that regard, but I would have cause to be skeptical. For starters, if he thinks it's such an important issue, why hasn't he been working on it already when considering the fact that he has been the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Subcommittee on European Affairs? He has not held a single hearing. He has done nothing to call attention to this issue and to work constructively with our allies. Now, I think the expectation of the Obama campaign is that simply by force of personality, he will somehow change these very complicated relationships we have. And I think what they're likely to find out very quickly is they're going to be disappointed. In fact, it is the case that a lot of people in Europe are rooting for Barack Obama, but that doesn't mean they're going to commit fresh troops. That doesn't mean they're going to make commitments they haven't been willing to make in the past, especially when some of his other policies are really at odds with the policies that Europe has been pursuing. For example, when it comes to Iran, where the EU3, France, Britain, and Germany have been pursuing multilateral diplomacy with Iran, which Barack Obama proposes to upend by holding his own unconditional presidential summit with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. That kind of thing is not likely to endear him to European leaders and would complicate his relations. And I very much doubt that he could do very much better in terms of getting troop commitments and other resources that we need than the current administration has done.
On Iraq, do you think the two are really very different at this point when it comes to future actions? McCain says he'd only stay as long as necessary to achieve victory. Obama says he'd only pull out as quickly as is safe for Americans and Iraqis that we'd like to get out in 16 months. Are those two statements opposite ways of really saying the same thing?
It's a little bit hard to gauge what exactly Senator Obama is saying. Certainly, he has been pretty consistent in saying that he would implement a 16-month timetable for withdrawal.
Yeah, though he keeps saying when pressed in interviews that he would only actually implement the withdrawal if he thought it was safe and Iraq was stable enough.
Well, it's a little bit confusing, and I think what's happened is he's put out an irresponsible pledge designed to essentially allow him to win Democratic primaries by mobilizing the anti-war vote against Senator Clinton, and now he's trying to back away from it a little bit. It's hard to know exactly where he stands, but I do know one thing, that when you look at both candidates on the issue of Iraq over the past couple of years, it's really been a real-time test of a commander-in-chief's judgment. Senator McCain's judgment in support of the surge has been completely vindicated, whereas Senator Obama not only opposed the surge and tried to legislate against it, he predicted it would actually make the situation worse, which I think is all you need to know about the chances that he will be able to deal successfully with Iraq when he's been consistently wrong about it for the last several years.
Well, if Senator McCain says victory is the standard by which we measure the time to pull out, how does Senator McCain, or how do you, define victory in Iraq?
Well, victory is defined as having a stable government in Iraq that does not oppress its people or threaten its neighbors, does not proliferate weapons of mass destruction or allow terrorism on its soil, and above all, a government that is able to control its own territory. And Iraq is very rapidly moving in that direction, thanks in large part to the surge, which Senator McCain supported and Senator Obama opposed. As the surge really turned around the dynamic in Iraq, and now as the Iraqi security forces become more capable of securing their own borders, we can ramp down our commitment, which is exactly what President McCain proposes to do. But he would do it in close consultation with our commanders on the ground, who are saying go slow because there's still major risks ahead with sectarian tensions and other problems, whereas Senator Obama has announced his plan for 16-month withdrawal without talking to the commanders on the ground. And, you know, you may be right that he may not hew to it once he comes into office, but that's a big risk, and it's one I don't think we can afford to take.
Sounds like you have kids at home there with you.
I do. One of the dangers of doing one of these interviews from the home front.
We've got about 90 seconds. I want to ask you the same thing I asked Wendy Sherman. In keeping with the news of the day and the theme of the debate, which is foreign policy, do you think the Obama and McCain responses to the credit crisis, and I mean their policy responses, not political responses, have implications for U.S. foreign policy?
Absolutely. I mean, clearly a lot of American power rests on our economic and financial strength, and that strength is in danger now because of the financial meltdown, which is why Senator McCain temporarily suspended his campaign and rushed to Washington to try to facilitate a deal, which was not getting done because there was a lot of concern on the Hill that Republicans in particular were opposing it, and they needed a high-level political intervention from their leader, Senator McCain, to try to bring both sides together. And that's what he's tried to do over the last couple of days, and I think he recognizes the importance of the situation and has acted appropriately.
Briefly, are McCain and Obama different substantively on a bailout plan, as far as you know? I know there's been back and forth over whether McCain did the right thing, but I think Obama has supported yesterday's compromise plan at the policy level, but McCain is withholding public comment. In 20 seconds, is that about right?
I think that's roughly right. I think they both talked about similar parameters for a deal, but the difference is that Senator McCain has been in there working to get the deal done, and especially working to overcome the opposition of House Republicans, which has been the key stumbling block.
All right. Max Boot from the Council on Foreign Relations, columnist for the Weekly Standard and the L.A. Times. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me on.
Now, once the debate starts, keep your computer on and check out our Twitter debate companion. I will be team tweeting there, along with On the Media's Brooke Gladstone, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein, and John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway. You can post there, too. Go to WNYC.org for the Twitter debate companion. And when we continue in a minute, we'll take your calls on what you would like to learn that would be new for you about the candidates. Stay with us. John McCain from the end of his convention speech. We played an Obama clip earlier from his convention speech. So there, guys, you're even. And from WNYC New York, this is Public Radio's Election Reset. I'm Brian Lehrer. The biggest audience for any presidential debate was the only Carter-Reagan debate in October 1980. 80 million people watched that debate. Some people think we will exceed that tonight. You know, the convention speeches of Obama and McCain and Palin were considered huge at about 38 million viewers. Will more than twice that number tune in tonight and set a record? We will soon find out. Now to your calls on the question, what don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight? What don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out tonight? Our lines are full for the moment. As people finish up, you can call 1-800-543-2543, 1-800-543-2543, or send an email to electionreset@gmail.com. You've heard all the spin and all the posturing 1,000 times. Are you just watching to root for your guy tonight? Or is there anything you'll be watching to learn about their positions on the economy or Iraq or Russia or Pakistan, and maybe how they look or how they move or what kind of temperament they appear to have in conflict with each other? Anything at all that you're hoping to learn? Martin in Manhattan, New York City. What are you hoping to learn?
I'm hoping to learn how the candidates will respond to our health crisis. America, the richest country in the world, has we're behind all of the European countries and Japan in life expectancy. And people with mental illness are dying, are losing 25 years of life. They're dying at an average age of 53. And those are the people who are being treated.
Martin, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you very much. That one is probably not in the scope of the definition of tonight's debate, but maybe in their domestic policy one. Ralph in Battle Creek, Michigan. You're on Public Radio's Election Reset. Hi, Ralph.
Hello. I would like to go back to, I guess, the question of judgment in foreign policy and sort of get a recap on what the candidates would say about the efficacy of invading a country like Iraq, which did not attack us and had nothing to do with 9/11 and did not have weapons of mass destruction. And has not, it probably, in my opinion anyway, has worsened our position in the world, crippled our military, messed up our budget.
They may go over all that again tonight, but do you think you'd learn anything new by that?
You know what? Let me just say, because you're focusing on the narrow issue of whether we win or lose in Iraq, and nobody likes to lose, of course. But I think the larger issue is of judgment and honesty toward the American people. And here we have a president, a present president, and a person who's running for president, who've basically participated in a dishonest foreign policy, a completely dishonest foreign policy.
Ralph, I'm going to leave it there and get some other voices on.
Alrighty.
I think actually that we're focusing on probably both of those things, but let's go next to Will in Lacey, Washington. Right, Will?
Yes. I guess my question is not a foreign policy question, but it's more of a domestic question. What was John McCain's involvement in the Keating and the SNL crisis from a few years ago?
And maybe they will get into the SNL, probably not quite in the scope of the debate tonight. But then again, if they're going to spend a half hour on the economy, as our earlier journalist guests predicted that they would, and because it was another banking crisis, and because John McCain had some kind of role as one of those five senators who got into some ethical hot water for the way in which he was involved with some of the special interests beside that, maybe that will come up tonight. Thank you very much. Ben in Redding, Connecticut, what would you like to learn about these candidates that you don't already know tonight?
I'd actually like to learn how Barack Obama and John McCain would deal with disputes with other countries such as Iran, basically other countries other than Iraq that our relations aren't too great with as of now. So I want to see the difference in their strategies to patch up those problems.
Ben, thanks a lot. Listeners, we have a couple open lines now. What don't you already know about Obama or McCain that you would like to find out in this debate tonight? Call 1-800-543-2543, 1-800-543-2543. You can also send email to electionreset@gmail.com. But by all means, call 1-800-543-2543, 1-800-543-2543. And again, all our lines are now full. Here are a couple of emails that have come in. One person in Easton, Pennsylvania writes, I'd like to know which candidate would convene a Congress of Economic Professors from the nation's leading universities to gain real expert input on the bailout, not fueled by either partisan playbook. And Erica in New Jersey asks, what is the true state of John McCain's physical health? His 1,000-page-plus medical history was made available to a select few, sans note-taking equipment, for only a brief period of time. His selection of Palin as a running mate has made this issue more critical. Next, go next to Brian in Flushing, Queens, in New York. Hi, Brian. You're on Public Radio's Election Reset. Brian, are you there? Brian, you didn't get nervous on us and go away, did you? Hi.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. You're on the air.
I was wondering, I'm only like 15 and I don't really know much about this election. And since we're in the economic crisis right now, I was wondering what their plans were for fixing this.
Right, and we will certainly hear that in this debate starting in about 15 minutes. At age 15, what got you involved enough even to be listening to the show tonight?
I knew this debate was coming up, and I just wanted to, you know, get the background info about this stuff. And, you know, when I grow up, I would like to get more involved in, like, at Wall Street. And, you know, with this economy starting to collapse, I just wanted to know, like,
What are they going to do?
Yeah.
All right. All right. Enjoy watching the debate. Thanks for calling us. Erica in Fairfield, Connecticut. You're on Public Radio's Election Reset. Hi, Erica.
Hi there.
So what would you like to learn tonight that you don't already know about these candidates? Oops. I think we'll try again in a minute. Maybe move into a place where you have a little better cell phone connection. Jim in North Bergen, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Brian, I'm curious as to why Barack Obama says he would meet with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. This man is really kind of a puppet. He doesn't really run the foreign policy. He doesn't run the military. Why not insist on a meeting with the Supreme Leader, Khomeini? And I know he claims he doesn't meet people who aren't Muslims or whatever, but, you know, it just seems to me that, you know, if you get politics, he's the man to talk to.
Jim, thank you. And let's try Erica in Connecticut again. Hi, Erica.
Hi there.
Now, don't move. Just talk.
My question is what their perception is about all of the statements coming out of North Korea right now. Do they think it's rhetoric for negotiation purposes? Do they think that the nuclear comments that they've made restarting their nuclear reactors is an actual concern? And if they do think it's an actual concern, what they plan to do about it?
All right. Thank you very much. Now, for all of you who called, you can comment as part of a group that will include myself and a few others from public radio during the debate. Once the debate starts, if you just ask one of those questions that you would like to learn from tonight, keep your computer on and check out our Twitter debate companion. I will be team tweeting there along with On the Media's Brooke Gladstone, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein, and John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway. You can post there too. Go to WNYC.org for the Twitter debate companion. This is Public Radio's Election Reset from WNYC New York. I'm Brian Lehrer, and it looks like the Maverick can't play for the draw tonight if he means business. The political website 538.com shows Obama now leading in electoral votes, and that's what really matters, 310 to 228. Wow, you need 270 to win on Election Day, and that's no small margin, 310 to 228. The website 538 is called that because that's how many total electoral votes there are. The Illinois senator may have the flailing economy and some swing states like Virginia to thank for the boost. So for more on how the candidates are faring in the polls as they go into this debate tonight, we've got number cruncher and founder of 538.com, Nate Silver. And to talk about how Virginia voters are leaning, we've got Rob Longley. He's city editor of the Daily News Record in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Nate Silver and Rob Longley, thanks for coming on with us tonight.
Sure, thanks, Brian. Glad to be here.
Now, Nate, you and I have been talking over the last few months, and I've been watching your site closely. Just about a week ago, I think you had John McCain in the lead with electoral votes. So what happened this week?
Well, I think it was the Wall Street crisis. I think they did a couple of things. Number one, it took the attention away from this big shift in momentum the Republicans had gotten after their convention. I think, Sarah Palin began to wear a little bit thinner on people when she actually had to, you know, respond to some interviews. But I also think, you know, the economy does play to Obama's strengths. He's been kind of campaigning on it all year, or not all year, but he's, you know, emphasized that more beginning in the late summer at the convention. So, you know, it's kind of a September surprise, I think, so to speak, for the Democrats.
Rob, for the first time in over 20 years, Virginia is a swing state in play for the general election. What happened?
Well, I think what you've had for the most part is a massive demographic
shift in the last 10 years or so. You have a lot of younger folks coming in from different parts of the country. You have a lot of new technology that's come to Virginia, and that in turn has drawn a lot of younger folks. And generally speaking, what the polls have found and what the studies have found is that, you know, the quarter million or so new voters that Virginia's that registered in Virginia in the last 6 months or so, you got about 40% of those under the age of 25, and generally speaking, those are going to lean towards Obama. So, you know, McCain's got a fight on his hands here.
Do you think that many of your fellow Virginians will be paying especially close attention to tonight's debate of the four? I'm going to quote from a September 23rd Washington Post story. Foreign affairs have historically played a big role in the outcome of presidential contests in Virginia, which is home to 800,000 military veterans and more than a dozen military installations.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Virginia is a battleground state now, and it hasn't gone for a Democrat since 1964, and essentially hasn't been in play since about that time. As well, 40 years anyway. And I think you're going to have people tuned in. both campaigns are spending a lot of money here. They have a lot of, there's a lot at stake here. And yes, you have a military faction down in the Hampton Roads area where you have a huge military base. And that area is really mixed. You have a lot of new people moving in there, so you have a lot of conservatives. But at the same time, you have a lot of more liberal-leaning voters coming in.
That's the famous Norfolk Naval Base. Now, Nate Silver, talk to me about swing states as a whole for a minute. If Obama is leading by 82 electoral votes as of right now, are we seeing a uniform trend in swing state voting behaviors? Are we seeing other states besides Virginia that haven't been swing states in the last few decades that are actually in play for Obama right now?
Well, you know, certainly Virginia, but also North Carolina is a state where all of a sudden he's gone from being, you know, a few points down to tied. He's ahead in one poll. I've heard about some internal polls that have him ahead as well in North Carolina. What we might be seeing is the effect of the Obama ground game, where in states like Virginia and North Carolina, they targeted early on, they targeted in the primaries as well, and they were successful there. McCain is probably playing catch-up in terms of resources on the ground, in terms of new voter registration. So we start to see that maybe more than in a place like Ohio or Florida, where the GOP is always prepared to do battle, where they can rely on the infrastructure that, you know, Karl Rove and George Bush set up for them in 2000 and 2004. Obama's gaining ground, though, in these new battlegrounds like Virginia and Colorado, North Carolina, Indiana, where he's polling, like, quite well lately.
So, Nate, how do you think that trend, those trends, McCain, even competitive in a place like North Carolina, how do you think that affects how either of them might come out tonight?
I do think that the South does tend to be a little bit more conservative on foreign policy issues, both because of the military presence and just kind of, you know, but I think the number of veterans as well. So I think, you know, Obama might try and appear a little bit hawkish. I mean, he's not that liberal necessarily on foreign policy. He is pretty hawkish on Afghanistan. But I think that, and also it's a Friday night, we'll have a somewhat older audience for the debate tonight. So I would expect Obama to be pretty much, you know, in the center of the road as far as foreign policy goes.
I don't know. There are a lot of people tweeting in our Twitter feed right now. So it's probably not a lot of 50-year-olds. And, you know, we'll put some debate drinking games up there in a little bit. But, Rob, how do you think these candidates are going to try to appeal to Virginians, the people in your state, because it's such a crucial state right now?
Well, I think McCain, what he has to do is, Virginia is how that differs from a lot of the rest of the country, and is fairly in line with the rest of the South, is the social conservative values, the cultural issues, and McCain's really got to play that up.
Really? So even in a foreign policy debate, you think he's going to try to hit cultural conservatism?
Well, yeah, I think so. And you know, when you talk about cultural conservatism, some of the issues that you've seen from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan coming out, the military, patriotism, that kind of thing, that, of course, that's, you know, foreign policy debate. And usually we think of, more traditionally social conservative issues mm-hmm. as domestic issues.
But all of that you've said so far is a build the turnout of the base strategy rather than try to attract all those new independent swing voters that Virginia has.
I think that's what McCain has to do. He has to get that base out in droves because what Obama's going to do, he's going to try to chip away at that, both clearly in Northern Virginia areas, but he's going to get at some of the conservative areas as well.
Sounds like your call waiting is going off. Nate Silver, we got 30 seconds. Give us the last word. What will you be watching for tonight, and what do you hope to learn from these candidates that you don't already know?
I think I already know more about the candidates than I'd ever want to. But I think it's important for Obama to be kind of the adult in the room. McCain, I think, is on the verge of kind of seeming like his campaign's a three-ring circus with kind of Sarah Palin and then, Britney Spears and this kind of dramatic trip to Washington. So I think both candidates want to seem kind of calm and level-headed. That demeanor might help Obama, who seems that way anyway.
Rob Longley, city editor of the Daily News Record in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and the founder of 538.com, Nate Silver, thank you both very much.
Thank you, Brian.
And that's tonight's edition of Public Radio's Election Reset. We will be back each debate night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Once the debate starts, keep your computer on and check out our Twitter debate companion. I will be team tweeting there along with On the Media's Brooke Gladstone, WNYC political director Andrea Bernstein, and John Hockenberry, host of The Takeaway. You can post too if you have a Twitter account, and you'll see the cool design of the debate companion, how your tweets will show up next to our tweets. Go to WNYC.org, WNYC.org for the Twitter debate companion. I'm Brian Lehrer. No relation to the moderator you're about to hear. This is Public Radio's Election Reset.